Hello, everyone. Good evening. This week is Parashas Matos, Matos Masai, and we'll be talking about the halachas of the 9 days and Tisha B'Av. This year, Tisha B'Av is unique. It falls out on Shabbos and is pushed off to Sunday, so it's called Tisha B'Av Nidcha. And the Shabbos itself has some of the halachas of Tisha B'Av. We'll be talking about that. This will be the last conference call for the next 2 weeks, which means the Thursday preceding Shabbos Chazayin and the Thursday preceding Shabbos Nachamu, there won't be any conference call, and hopefully the following week we'll be able to get back on track. So, as far as the halachos of the 9 days are concerned, so we all refrain from eating meat or meat dishes throughout the 9 days, according to the Ashkenaz custom, unless it's a Sudas Mitzvah. Now, when we say meat dishes, it doesn't mean food cooked in a fleishig pot. That's not a problem, even if that pot was used within 24 hours. When we say something is fleishig, this meat, means that it actually contains some meat ingredient. So a soup that has some meat in it, or chicken, or whatever, that would be an issue during the 9 days, but not just a parva soup, a vegetable soup, which has been heated up in a fleishig pot. That would not be a problem. Children who are old enough to understand the idea of a prohibition, like they're 4 or 5, and you can explain them already the concept that we don't eat meat during the 9 days, they should not be fed these foods. Younger children, 2 or 3, you can. Likewise, wine is also avoided and not added to dishes during the 9 days, with the exception of Shabbos, where you're allowed to drink wine and eat meat and meat dishes as well. Now, during the 9 days, we don't wear any new clothing, and we also don't wear anything that has been freshly laundered throughout the 9 days, with the exception of Shabbos. On Shabbos, you can wear new clothing, and you can also wear freshly laundered clothing. The truth is that on Shabbos, it's especially Shabbos Chazayin, it's preferable not to wear brand new clothing. But freshly laundered clothing is okay to wear on Shabbos, but during the 9 days, we don't wear freshly laundered clothing. So in order to prepare clothing for the 9 days, we wear them for a short amount of time before the 9 days begins, so say 10 or 20 minutes for a shirt or a skirt, in order to remove the status of freshly laundered. Now, this can also be done on Shabbos, provided that it's not overtly clear that you're preparing for the weekdays. So if what you're wearing is something which technically befits Shabbos, it's not clearly a weekday outfit, it's something that you could technically wear on Shabbos, and you do change on Shabbos a couple of times without it being clear why you're changing, so that's fine. So you can do that as well, and then that would make it fine to be used during the 9 days as well. If for whatever reason you forgot to do that in preparation for the 9 days, and the clothing is not clothing that you can wear on Shabbos because it's like really real weekday clothing, so there is another option to put it on the floor and try to remove its freshly laundered status that way. So, you know, you can't just rub it on carpet. You would have to like put it on the floor, your kitchen floor, and step on it a little bit. It's not the best way to do it, but if you have an absence of any other option, that is what you can do. Now, no clothing can be bought. The one question which I get frequently is, what is the status of a shell? Because on underwear, we are not makfid to wear it before the 9 days, because as far as that's concerned, we consider ourselves an istanist. We consider ourselves to be particular, and that's more than we can handle. So the question is, what exactly is the status of a shell? Do we look at a shell as underwear, or do we look at a shell as a shirt? The difference being, does it need to be prepared before the 9 days? So it's not really clear how to look at it. It's sort of a mixture of both. So it would be ideal to try to wear it either before the 9 days or during Shabbos, if possible. But if not, you can rely on the fact that we'll consider it to be undergarments rather than to consider it as a shirt. No clothing can be bought or ordered during the 9 days. Likewise, no item which gives significant pleasure can be purchased, like furniture, home decorations, large appliances, simple needs can be purchased, like even a small electric appliance, a hand blender if you need it, things like that. That's not a problem that you can purchase. There's no carte blanche iser prohibition against buying things in the 9 days. It's just a problem with buying things that give pleasure. So clothing and other things like that give pleasure, but small needs can be filled, and that's not a problem during the 9 days. We don't wash or shower or swim during the 9 days. Now, if a person is very uncomfortable or has gotten dirty, sweaty, whatever, so whatever the situation is, they may shower in cold or lukewarm water. But the idea is that really you're just doing it not to enjoy the shower. You're doing it just to take care of the problem that you're uncomfortable and you're dirty. And therefore, it should be as brief as possible, to the point, with the minimum amount of soap and shampoo as necessary. And it should really be clear the difference between this shower and a shower you take the rest of the year, because this is not permitted to take a shower, and we just do it because we're an Easternist and it bothers us a lot if we don't take a shower. So you do what you have to do, and that's it. As far as preparing for Shabbos, though, preparing Shabbos, one, is allowed to shower for Shabbos. That is mutter, especially this year, where the first Shabbos is not even Shabbos Chazayin, so you certainly can bathe. You can even use hot water in this Shabbos. The next Shabbos, Shabbos Chazayin, is better to use lukewarm water. Likewise, use a minimum of soap and shampoo as necessary, but not more than you need. Cutting nails is permitted for preparation of Shabbos. So it's only mutter on Erev Shabbos. You can't cut your nails or get a manicure during the week, during the 9 days, but Erev Shabbos it's allowed. Shaving and waxing for women is equivalent to cutting nails. So therefore, it can be done L'Kavod Shabbos, or obviously it can also be done for preparation for the mikvah, that even in the middle of the week. And likewise, nails can be cut for preparation of the mikvah. For Shabbos, freshly laundered clothing can be worn. Now, if someone is cooking food for Shabbos, which is fleishig, has meat, you should avoid eating it. But if necessary, you can taste it and, try not to swallow it. You could just taste it in your mouth to see if it needs salt or whatever. That's allowed, but should be kept to also a minimum. Children who eat before Shabbos and go to sleep, so their Shabbos Suda is really on Friday, you can give them Shabbos food and they can eat fleishig because that's, so to speak, their Shabbos Suda. Now, the Shabbos, that's this Shabbos. The next Shabbos, which is the Shabbos, which actually is Tisha B'Av, just Tisha B'Av is pushed off. So nothing really applies to Shabbos. It's not, we don't treat it like Tisha B'Av, but there are two exceptions. There are two things that do apply. One, which is relevant to women and men, is that marital relations should be avoided on Tisha B'Av, that's Shabbos, unless it's a Leil Tefillah. And then the second thing, which is more relevant to men, is that you shouldn't learn starting from Chatzos on Shabbos because it has the status of Erev Tisha B'Av. However, many Paiskim allow learning in order to avoid Bittul Torah, but at the same time, I didn't think it was proper to have an organized speech and the whole learning schedule barabim, and therefore that's why there's no Nishay Summer Shir next week. Now on Shabbos, next Shabbos, which is Shabbos of Tisha B'Av, you can eat meat and you can drink wine until Shkia. There is absolutely no Suda Tam of Sekhet. You don't eat an egg on Shabbos. You don't do any of those things because we don't do any overt form of Avelos on Shabbos. However, the Shal Shudas, which precedes Tisha B'Av, it's preferable not to make a major Suda with guests and all that unless the people you're inviting simply need a place to eat, but otherwise it's better not to have guests during that time. One shouldn't say Baruch HaMavdol until like 50 minutes after Shkia, and at that point you say Baruch HaMavdol, you remove your Shabbos clothing, your leather shoes, and then from then you begin sitting on the ground. None of this should be done until 50 minutes after Shkia, but it's important for everybody to remember to say Baruch HaMavdol Ben Kadesh L'Chol, and at that point the Tisha B'Av will begin. No preparation for Tisha B'Av can be done on Shabbos, so you can't bring a kinnis or Tisha B'Av shoes to shul if you want to do that. That's not something that you can do on Shabbos. preceding Tisha B'Av. Now, Matzah Shabbos, next Matzah Shabbos, the Havdalah is not made because you can't, you know, you're fasting, you can't eat, you can't drink. So what happens is that you do, on Matzah Shabbos, you make the bracha of Borei Ma'ir Ha'esh on a fire, on a Havdalah candle. However, the men will all be doing that in shul. That everyone will make Borei Ma'ir Ha'esh in shul. So the women can do it at home, or, you know, if your husband comes home, doesn't not yet in shul, he can come home and be mighty everybody. Regardless, the main thing is to remember to say Baruch Hamav Zulim Kadesh L'chol. The Pesamim will not be used next week, not Matzah Shabbos, nor Sunday night. And what's important is that if anybody is not going to be fasting, and this year being that Tisha B'Av is a Nidcha, pushed off, not on its right day, therefore the Tisha B'Av has a status of other Tanesim, so people that are allowed to eat on, whether it's Shavuot or Tanis Esther, etc., people that are allowed to eat on other Tanesim are allowed to eat this year on Tisha B'Av as well, nursing, pregnant women. So therefore, those people who are not fasting, they should try to fast until Chatzais. But after Chatzais, they need to make Havdalah before they eat anytime on Sunday because they haven't heard Havdalah yet. So therefore, they should make Havdalah on coffee. So coffee can be in place of wine. Make sure it's not too hot so that you can drink a Revius, a couple, like 3 or 4 ounces, quickly. And that's what you should make Havdalah on. And all you say is Shahakal Niyah B'Tvara, and then you make the Bracha of Havdalah, as Amar B'Kadesh L'Chol and El-Hajach. That's all you do. You just say those two things, and that's your Havdalah before you break your fast. All other halachas of Tisha B'Av apply as usual, even if you're not fasting. You still need to keep all the halachas of Tisha B'Av. Sunday night after Tisha B'Av, you can take a haircut and shower and laundry. All is permitted immediately because this year it's a nitcha. So Sunday night you can do all those. The only thing you should wait until the next morning is eating meat and drinking wine. That you should wait until the next morning. But otherwise, a haircut, showering, and laundry this year are permitted immediately. Matzah Shabbos, Matzah Tisha B'Av, Sunday night, next Sunday night. So this week is Parshas Matzah Masai, and there is a very interesting story in this week's Parsha where the tribe, the Shvatim of Gad and Reuven, approach Moshe Rabbeinu, and they make a request to be given their portion of Eretz Yisrael in the land which was on the eastern side of the Yarden, which is outside of Eretz Yisrael proper, what is nowadays called Jordan. So they claim to Moshe Rabbeinu that they have huge amounts of livestock, and that particular stretch of land is perfect for cattle farming. So Moshe Rabbeinu at first suspects them of being scared to do battle with the 7 nations that inhabited Israel, but after extracting from them a guarantee that they will accompany everybody else to battle and they will not return back to their home until everybody has already finished the battle and won, so then he agrees to their request, and he gives them their portion in what's referred to as Eivre HaYarden, the other side of the Yarden. But Chazal make a very interesting remark about the give and take between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Shvatim. See, in the tribe's presentation to Moshe Rabbeinu, they say, we will build corral for our sheep, that's Gidrois L'Tzeinenu, and Arim L'Tapenu, and cities for our children. When Moshe Rabbeinu replies, he reverses the order. And he tells them, build cities for your children and corrals for your sheep. So he says, first children and then sheep. So the Medrash, is partially quoted in Rashi, says that the B'nai Gad and the B'nai Reuven made the Iker into a Tafel, the main thing, into a side thing, and the Tafel, the side thing, into an Iker. They love their money more than their children's lives. Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, no, make the Iker the Iker. Build cities first. And then build the stables and whatever is necessary for your livestock. The Medrash puts this explanation to the pasuk in Mishlei, Lev Chacham Liyaminai, the heart of a wise man is to his right side, the Lev Tzil Lesmalai, the heart of a fool is to his left side. And in this context, what that means is that a wise man has his heart attuned to the right side, meaning to his spirituality, whereas a fool or someone who's not thinking straight has his heart attuned to his left, which is his physical needs. Now, it seems unlikely that the people who lived through the Midbar and learned Torah directly from Moshe Rabbeinu will make a mistake in a basic concept such as this one. They were tremendous people. They were spiritual giants, and they were above and beyond any and all that came after them. So what's the depth of this exchange? Why would they have put their sheep before their children? The Sefer Ber Yosef from the Maggid Rav Yosef Salant has a beautiful chat. He explains that the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were being very practical in their request. He says the pasuk describes that when there was this war between the nations that dwelled outside of Eretz Yisrael, which were the nations of Sichon and the nations of Og, that war took place outside of the cities. Rashi explains that Hashem was making things much easier for Klal Yisrael, because instead they would have had to enter the cities, conduct guerrilla warfare in an urban setting. They would have to fight each city block by city block. And instead, Hashem put the idea in the eyes of those nations to collaborate, gather together in one huge army, and they waged war outside of their cities. So that Klal Yisrael just defeated them all together in that one field of battle outside of the city, and had all the cities open to them to claim as their own. So it turns out that they had a whole bunch of cities that were already built, and they were in move-in condition. And they didn't need to really do much to those cities to make it livable for their wives and their children. So the only real job that was ahead of the Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven was to set up the barns and the whatever was necessary for their livestock. And then they can do whatever minor renovation was necessary in the cities for their children. They put first what was a much greater task, and secondary was the minor task. That was the order that they put the sheep before their children. However, Moshe Rabbeinu pointed out to them that there's a mistake here because there's something wrong with the priority. He says the cities that were built by idolaters for their families can be decent residences for Jews. The houses in the cities were full of idols, they're full of carvings, and the various different rooms and furniture were designed for idol worship. The cities were full of statues, the names of the streets and the names of the cities all reflected their beliefs. There's no way a Jewish child could grow up in such a city and such a surrounding and be in totally encircled by all this idol remnants and not be affected spiritually, especially with his father away at war with the other Jews against the seven nations. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you have your work cut out for you. These cities need to be torn down and rebuilt according to Jewish standards and values. So, and this command was reiterated to the whole of Klal Yisrael later on regarding the cities in Eretz Yisrael. They were told they have to destroy all remnants of idolatry, their places of worship, their idols, their trees, their carvings, and all vessels. So the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven did this, and more. It says they changed the names of all the cities as well. They took Moshe Rabbeinu's message to heart, and when they affirmed their acceptance of Moshe's plans, they truly did put building the cities first and then working for their sheep, as Moshe Rabbeinu had pointed out to them. So what caused them to initially overlook the spiritual needs of the children? What caused them to make this mistake and only reckon with the physical, with the fact that the cities worked for them on a physical level? So the Medrash explained that this is a result of their focus on their livestock and their wealth. Once that was what they were worrying about, they were focused on how will they take care of the sheep, what will be the best place for their sheep farming business to prosper. It shaped the way that they viewed their other priorities as well. And therefore, they only viewed them through a filter of physicality. Is this city comfortable? Does it serve our needs? Does it have room? And then it's good. And it caused them to overlook the clear spiritual danger presented by their plan. So this is what the Medrash calls making the Iker into a Tafel and the Tafel into an Iker. It means confusing priority. When a person comes to make a decision, the Ber Yosef says, regardless of what the need for change or what the need for action is, and even if the catalyst to make this decision truly is a physical issue, the method of approaching the question has to be, number one, what's the spiritual side of this? Let's work that out first. And then we'll approach the physical benefits. Because if the physical side of things is approached first, then the tendency is that you view the spiritual side in that light as well. And you don't really pay true attention to all aspects of the spiritual nature of what you're doing and what you're planning and how you're looking to change. And that can cause a person to overlook what's really important in life. When a person is making a decision, the priorities have to be there, and that has to be the order of how you consider what goes into this decision. Spiritual first, then the physical. The Bar Yesu quotes a pasuk, which the Gemara talks about, which says, "B'chol derechecha de'ehu, v'hu yiyashu archesecha." In all your ways, know Hashem first, and that will straighten out our path, the path. If the order of importance is correct, then the rest of the plan will follow suit. Have a good Shabbos and a good night. Kol Tov.